Z-Trim Appetite Control is perfect for taking the edge off hunger.
I lost 6 pounds the first week and never felt hungry.
I lost a full pant size.
I've lost 15 pounds in 2 months without dieting.
Without dieting.
You're hearing the success stories of people who have discovered Z-Trim Appetite Control. Developed by the USDA, all-natural Z-Trim helps you feel satisfied before you eat more than you should.
I can breeze through work without distracting hunger pains.
I don't have to exercise, and I still eat the foods that I love.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is a healthy way to help manage your weight regardless of diet or exercise.
I simply take 2 capsules before each meal.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is fantastic.
For people who need to manage their weight with limited physical activity, Z-Trim provides a naturally healthy option.
To order Z-Trim Appetite Control capsules made with USDA-developed Z-Trim, go to ztrim.com. That's ztrim.com. And enter the code word NATURAL for a 10% listener discount. Or call 1-877-MY-Z-Trim. The only thing you have to lose is weight.
To equal protection under the law. It's one of your civil rights. So when
tomorrow, members of the 110th Congress will take their oaths of office, and I congratulate them. I welcome their arrival into town. I'm looking forward to working with them.
Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Welcome to the program tonight. Thanks for joining us. Yeah, that was Chuckle Nuts today. That was Chuckle Nuts today at his press conference, or his not press conference, a little speech he gave talking about how it's time to stop the madness in D.C. It's time to stop all the partisanship. It's time to play nice and be good. And we'll get to that a little bit later this evening. God, I hate these people. I just... They really disgust me. Negroponte. Remember him? Yeah, he is. He's got a new job. Apparently, Death Squad Boy is heading to the State Department. Going to put the mock back in democracy. I guess this is... I don't know. Somebody's planned to light a fire under Condoleezza Rice. Maybe literally. So this is Raisin Brain's last night to party with his do-nothing Congress before the Democrats come in with their scary minimum wage and education bills and health care. So Chuckle Nuts cried today for the cameras about bipartisanship and warning the new Congress about leaving enough money to fight his ever-escalating war in Iraq. Just a couple of moron sounds tonight, not the full assault you suffered last night in our 2006 retrospective. We'll get to that in a minute. Oh, yeah, finally, Foxy the Snowman tried to explain the out-of-control Saddam execution to a ever more whorish American White House press corps. And the whorish White House press corps kept asking if Bush had any concept of reality where it concerns the bloody and chaotic nation he didn't build there. It was quite a scene. We'll have some of that for you. But I want to start with something incredibly positive tonight. What? You don't like positive? You like the bitching and moaning, complaining and kvetching that you hear on this program every night? You do? Well, I have a positive story. Sip of coffee first. I guess you saw this. It was on most of the network news programs tonight. A commuter saved a subway rider in New York. Saved a teenager's life. This kid apparently suffered a seizure and fell onto the subway tracks in one of the subway stations in Upper Manhattan. And the guy was standing there, the rescuer. There's the victim and the rescuer. The rescuer is standing there on the platform. He's got his 2 little girls with him. One is, 4 and one is 6. I believe that's how old they were. The teenager, the victim, is like 19. So the guy falls onto the tracks, and he's in the middle of a seizure. I guess epilepsy, a grand mal seizure. I don't know. The parents of the teenager said, you know, this was the first time. Maybe it's not that. Maybe he's got some sort of a brain disorder or something. But regardless, this young kid had a seizure, and he falls off the platform onto the tracks. And, yeah, here comes a train. So the rescuer is standing up there with his two kids, and he sees what's about to happen. So, you know, since he's got his two daughters, this is what he said. He didn't want them to see something horrible. So he turned to the nearest other passenger standing there and said, "Could take my daughter's hands." And this guy jumps down on the tracks and tries to get this guy up, the victim. And the victim is in the middle of a seizure, and the rescuer can't get him up on the platform. So he does the only thing that he could do to save their lives. How he thought of this, who knows. He pushes the victim down in the trough between the two railroad tracks, the train tracks, pushes the victim down in that. It's about, I don't know, about 12 inches deep. In some places it can be as shallow as 8 or as deep as 24. But where the rescuer pushes this guy down between the tracks and lays on top of him, because the victim is thrashing, his arms are flailing around, his feet are flailing. You know, the train's going to come by, it doesn't kill him, it's going to decapitate him, cut off his arms and legs. So the rescuer lays on top of this guy, holds him down, and the train comes into the station, comes to a stop after about 8 or 9 cars pass over the two of them. The people in the subway station are just freaking out. When the train stops, the first thing you hear is the rescuer underneath the train saying, "Will you tell my two little girls I'm okay? It's all right." And the guy that fell on the track, he's all right too. We're okay. Jesus God. So they get the train stopped. You know, the train didn't go anywhere. And they get these two people out of there. Now, the student is a student at the New York Film Academy. He was taken to a hospital where he's listed in stable condition with only a minor injuries. Oh, my God. And the guy, the rescuer, he says, "The only thing that popped up in my mind was, okay, go for the gutter. So I dove in, I pinned him down, and once the first car ran over us, my thing was to keep him still." He said, "I didn't want the man's body to get run over. I saw him fall. I didn't want him to get run over. Plus, I was with my daughters. I didn't want him to see that." Now, the young man's family are describing the rescuer as an angel, as a hero. Yeah, this is a hero. This is a hero. His name is Wesley Autry, 50 years old. This is a hero. And because of what Wesley Autry did, the young man is alive and is going to be okay. He's a Navy veteran. He says that's what kind of helped him realize what he had to do, and he just did it. Oh, and one other thing: who is that terrible right wing newscaster used to say? And now the rest of the story. Who was that? can't think of it either. Don't send me an email to come to us. Here's the rest of the story. The victim is a 19-year-old white guy, and the rescue is a 50-year-old black guy. Now, why does that matter? Why does that matter? Why is Malloy reporting that last little bit, that the victim was white, the rescuer was black? Well, you figure it out. Yeah, it was Paul Harvey. I watched this on television tonight and just got tears in my eyes because of first of all, the nature of the story. Secondly, just shivers from the idea that in a moment like that, there's a guy with two kids, and he reacts instantly to save another person's life, makes an effort to pull him out. When he can't pull him out, his mind clicks over the situation and just lands on the only possible other solution, the one that entails incredible risk, and that is laying on top of this guy and holding him down. I mean, I sat here and I truly got shivers up and down my spine when I thought about how did the man make that decision in seconds. Here, watch my kids. Saves the life of a total stranger, puts his own life at risk. And he said later, he was interviewed by, ABC, and they were saying, man, you know, and he said, well, it's one way to start a new year, I guess, saving somebody's life. What a way to start a new year by saving someone's life. And then think about George Bush. I know, you know I was going to corrupt the story and vomit all over it with Bush. Bush is talking about wanting more death in the new year, as much death as he can possibly engineer. The evil son of a bitch. So hats off to 50-year-old Wesley Autry of Manhattan, who was standing on the platform with his two daughters, whom he was taking home so he could go to his construction job. He said, I didn't want the man's body to get run over.
Doing talk radio right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Through a hole in the air. From those nads in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real. Or it's real,
21,
but it ain't
21
exactly
past the hour.
From the war.
This is, we're going to call this Wesley Autry night. I just can't... Can't get over what sort of emotional or mental or whatever the process is. It is so counter to the survival instinct in human beings, so counter to everything that evolution has determined is important. I guess that's why they call it altruism or an act of heroism. To literally know that you are risking your own life to save someone else's. In a situation like that, I realize there are situations where perhaps that's not as uncommon, maybe in a war or some sort of mass chaotic situation. But this is in Midtown Manhattan. Anyway.
Would you have done it?
I don't know, I don't think anyone knows. As I sit here and answer the question, the answer is no. Of course not.
You wouldn't have let go of young Molly's wee little hand, and I thought the punchline to this story was going to be when you started to tell it to me this afternoon that, oh, my God, then one of his children fell into the third rail or something.
Well, sometimes something evil like that happens. But as far as I'm concerned, would I do it? As I sit here right now, the answer is no. Of course I wouldn't, because I will respond as I'm sitting here in the studio to rational thought. That's an irrational act. Now, in the situation, I don't know what I would do. I have no earthly idea. And I think if you would have asked Mr. Autry, Wesley Autry, if you would have said, a week ago, hey, listen, if there's a train coming, a guy's on the track, you're going to jump on the track and hold him down while the train runs over the two of you? I think Wesley Autry would have said, what, are you out of your mind? Of course not. I've got two daughters. So. Pat Robertson is in the news again. Why isn't this man either locked up? This is another reason why religion disgusts me. It just... And I really do think that atheists all over the country need to come out of the closet. Haven't we had enough of this? And I'm not just talking about Robertson. I'm talking about this thinly veiled holy war that Bush and these insane jihadists are doing to each other. You know, the sectarian violence in Iraq, Sunni killing Shia. You know, I wish all of them would just rot. I'm so sick of religion. I'm so sick of the corruption and chaos and poison and negativity and ugliness and mind-bending just... I can't even find the words. I can't even find the words. But every once in a while, Pat Robertson's Robertson opens his pie hole. And he did yesterday and said that God has told him. God has told him. Pat, you psychotic son of a bitch, that's your own brain stem talking to you. That's the reptilian part of your brain, you crazy old killer. This is a would-be assassin. This is a guy who, if he wasn't such a coward, would pick up a weapon and go try to kill Cesar Chavez. I mean, that's he says somebody should do it. Hugo Chavez. So anyway, Pat Robertson now says, and the Associated Press, everybody picks up on it, even I do, and I'm ashamed. I should just ignore this crap. But he says that God told him a terrorist attack on the United States is going to cause a mass killing late in 2007. He was on his putrid, filthy, vomitous 700 Club on the non-Christian broadcasting network, and he said, I'm not necessarily saying it's going to be nuclear. The Lord didn't say nuclear, but I do believe it'll be something like that. What is with these people? And I don't care what the religion is. It seems like the Muslims and the Christians are the most psychotic. What is this? God talks to them, and oh, man, you know, why even bother? Why bother? It's just disgusting. I wish Jerry, Jerry too, but I wish Pat Robertson could go on to his reward. I just wish that there was some frame of reference wherein Robertson and Falwell, all these religious nuts, could hang for just a millionth of a second as their consciousness is slamming to an end, and they realize, no, there's no heaven, there's no hell, there's nothing. It's the void. It's the same thing that you experienced, Pat, before you were born. The void. But, of course, that doesn't work that way, does it? But they make me sick. I'm so tired of religion, and I know a lot of people are going to say, well, Mike, there are good Christians, there are people who are working for social justice. If you really want to work for social justice, why not cast off this nonsensical, these chains of religious dogma and just do it from a secular humanist point of view? I mean, if you know, you don't have to have cover of the church or the synagogue or the...
Security advisor to help unstick things that may get stuck. That's the best way to put it. He's an unsticker.
Oh my God. John Negroponte, who made his bones in Central America, before that working for the CIA and the DIA and other clandestine operations around the world, organizing death squads. Negroponte would never do the wet work himself. He would never get down in the trenches and grab somebody around the throat and rip their damn head off. He would just send other people to do the dirty, bloody work for him and for whatever crime syndicate he was working for, usually something posing as a Republican administration in this country. Well, John Negroponte, the Director of National Intelligence, has accepted the position of Deputy Secretary of State. According to NBC News, I love their next line. The office of Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice has been seriously understaffed for months. Oh, okay. Well, let's put a mass murderer in there. Let's put somebody who went to Iraq. Remember, Negroponte, back when was it? A year and a half? 2 years ago? When was it, Kathy? When Negroponte, all of a sudden, before this oil executive, Zalmay Khalilzad, was appointed, who happens to be a Sunni Muslim, by the way, to be our ambassador to Iraq, Negroponte had the job. Yeah, he did. For about 4 or 5 months, he went to Iraq. When he came home, the death squads started operating against the Sunnis. Eh? Let's see. 2 plus 2. Damn, that equals 4. Negroponte is a murderer. He's a killer. Only he's a conspirator. Like I said, he is not courageous enough, if that's the right word, ballsy enough, if that's the right word, to pick up a knife and go slit somebody's throat. But he will be happy to organize the throat slitters. He will be happy to explain, all right, here's what you have to do. Here's what you have to do. If you want to promote terror in the hearts of the Sunnis, then you don't just round them up and shoot them in the back of the head. You round them up and you drill holes in their bodies first. Then you take a knife normally used for fish gutting and you cut their eyes out. Then you reach into their screaming throats, pull their tongues out and cut them off, and then you put a bullet in their forehead. And then you do that 40 or 50 more times, and then you leave the bodies in a field outside Baghdad, and then you will have struck terror into the hearts of the Sunni. I don't know if the story is apocryphal or not, but it was in Apocalypse Now, when Colonel Kurtz is in the cave. And he hasn't been killed yet. Who? Captain Colonel Kurtz is in the cave, and he hasn't been macheted yet. And he's talking to the captain who's there to kill him. Whatever Martin Sheen's character was. And Kurtz tries to explain the invincibility of the enemy, in this case, the Viet Cong. And Kurtz talks about a village, a South Vietnamese village, where a few days earlier, the hearts and minds people of the U.S. military and the South Vietnamese had come into the village and inoculated all of the children in the village against measles and mumps and polio, trying to win the hearts and minds of the villagers who may swing with the VC tonight and with the NVA tomorrow and with the South Vietnamese the next day. Well, after inoculating all the children, the military team returns about 2 weeks later and they find that the North Vietnamese army had come into the village that night and whacked off the arms of all the children who had been vaccinated. And Kurtz is there in the cave before Martin Sheen ices him with a machete, and Kurtz is just in awe of that. And rightly so, because in Apocalypse Now, borrowing on Heart of Darkness, Kurtz is the consummate warrior. No mercy asked, none given. Negroponte would not be the person who walked back into the village with a machete to cut off the arms. He would be the sniveling little bastard who would tell someone about that scene in the movie and say, "That's what you need to do, boys." I'm so old, I remember when the Department of State for this country was all about diplomacy and making deals and trying to work things out. Oh, I'm not so naive as to not realize that while the Department of State was doing that, the CIA was undermining everything and assassinating leaders and destabilizing governments and overthrowing certain governments. But the Department of State at least maintained a facade of being about diplomacy. So Negroponte to be the new Deputy Secretary of State, and a very, very good reason why, because probably the most ineffective, useless figurehead Secretary of State in the history of this republic is Condoleezza Rice. Why does this woman not go back to being a university provost or whatever she was, or chancellor, and just forget about it? She has as much business being a Secretary of State in these times as I do, i.e. zero, zip. No reason whatsoever, except for the fact, as George Bush so famously said, when someone accuses him of being a racist, he can point across the table at Condoleezza Rice. So Negroponte joins the team. The State Department now will become a branch of the terror squads set up by the Bush crime family. Is tomorrow the day when the Democrats are sworn in? Republicans are already whining, aren't they? Oh, don't hurt us, please, please. Justin Rood, writing at tpmmuckraker.com, points out the fact that Republicans aren't yet an official minority in the House, but they're already beginning a campaign to portray themselves as victims of a heartless Democratic minority or majority. They have circulated three of these Republican cowardly bastards have circulated a letter that starts whining and begging for a minority bill of rights. No, it has nothing to do with race or gender. It has to do with these filthy, disgusting Republicans.
Ow! Ow, they're going to hurt us. They're going to hurt us. Oh, we know. No.
Cowardly bastards. Oh, my God, these Republicans make me sick. Hey, don't worry, Republicans, you little whiny asses. Nobody's going to smack you around. Nobody's going to hurt you. What, Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi? No, 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 they're not. They're all about bipartisanship, a word that you people associate with spousal abuse. Didn't one of your more famous thugs say bipartisanship or trying to get along with Democrats is the equivalent of spousal abuse? You know, screw you people, you Republicans. I would like to see every single one of you go down in defeat, or better yet, every single one of you suited up, given a weapon, and dropped into the heart of Baghdad. But since that's not going to happen, you little spineless rats, don't worry about the Democratic Party leadership. They're not going to hurt you. They really aren't. What they are going to do is to try to govern from this place called the center. The Democrats are going to try to show the American people, even though the American people resoundingly rejected everything about the Republican Party, everything about the Bush crime family in these last elections, the Democrats still don't get it. They still don't get it. The Democratic leadership, oh, well, you know, in the nation. So we've come to this. The lesson that George W. Bush seems to have extracted from the dramatic November elections, from the mounting national demand to start pulling out of Iraq, is to get us in ever deeper. The decider has apparently decided to ignore the few common sense recommendations of the Baker-Hamilton report, and instead wants to satisfy his urge to surge. The president not only itches to, quote, stay the course, unquote, but threatens to put the pedal to the metal and send another 20 or 30,000 American troops to help secure Baghdad. No matter that the last time the U.S. flooded the Iraqi capital with troops, it only produced more violence. No matter that every reasonable analyst has told him that the solution to the war in Iraq is political, not military. There's more here, and I shall share it with you when we return. This is Nova M Radio.
Feeling left out by right-wing talk radio? You found a home with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. So the Nation editorial, lead editorial in the current issue, the January 15th, 2007, talking about Bush wants to send, even though the American people have spoken, and just about anyone with the sense God gave a bag of doorknobs has spoken to this freak. And he wants to increase the killing, the murder, the slaughter. The Nation goes on, the loudest sideline cheerleader for this reckless option is the candidate who hopes to replace Bush in 2008, John McCain. He argued on a recent trip to Baghdad that if U.S. troops leave Iraq in chaos, groups like Al-Qaeda, quote, will follow us home, end quote. If the Beltway conventional wisdom is right, that McCain is merely staking out an I told you so position for his presidential run, his endorsement of the surge is even more contemptible. We know what may be driving McCain is support of a doom policy, but what's the trouble with Harry? Appearing on ABC television this week, incoming Democratic Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid said he would, quote, go along, end quote, with the president's proposed troop surge, so long as it was only for a few months and only if it led to eventual withdrawal. Fortunately, other Democratic voices, Senators Kennedy, Jack Reed and Joe Biden, to name a few, immediately rebutted Reed. And while the congressional Democrats are divided on the details of what to do next in Iraq, there's the creeping fear that victims of excessive caution, they have squandered the week since the election. Too much time has been lost. Too much hope was invested in the Baker-Hamilton report. And not enough has been done to articulate a clear, viable alternative to what's streaming from the White House. The Democrats must remember that their midterm victory was a clear mandate from the American people not to waffle or to dawdle, but to immediately reverse Bush's war policy. When the latest polls show 3 out of 4 Americans wanting troops out of Iraq, when former Secretary of State Colin Powell says more troops won't work, when our current military commanders, from John Abizaid and George Casey to the Joint Chiefs, have clearly signaled they're opposed to the surge, when Republican Senator Gordon Smith suggests the Iraq policy is, quote, criminal, end quote, the Democrats have no choice but to be on the front lines of calls for disengagement and withdrawal. When the Democratic majority is formally seated tomorrow, it will be confronted with a sharp challenge. As Mark Cooper reports in the current issue of The Nation, there's a different kind of surge mounting in the military. Almost 1,000 active duty soldiers, sailors, Marines, and airmen, rank and file enlistees, as well as dozens of high-ranking officers, have signed an historic petition to Congress, what they call an appeal for redress, demanding that the troops be brought home. You hear that? While their communication to Congress is protected by law, many of these active-duty troops, including some who still want to make the military their lifetime career, have taken the bold and risky step of standing up publicly to oppose the war. Can't comfortably elected Democrats do as much? Lead editorial in the current issue of The Nation. Are you all familiar with the appeal for redress? You can Google it. Almost 1,000 active duty soldiers, sailors, Marine, airmen. This is it's probably unprecedented. Because the military, being strictly vertical, chain of command and all that, for the rank and file troops, and the commanders, and the junior officers, and the senior officers, and the retired officers, to sign a petition
to Congress?
And this idiotic bastard in the White House is going to continue. He doesn't care. If this is not a sociopath or a psychopath, then somebody please define it for me. We are not winning. We will never win. There's nothing to win. He showed his psycho mother, and he showed his bumbling, mumbling father that he can go into another country that is defenseless and kill their leader. Jesus Christ, isn't that enough? Isn't it time to stop, George? You've proven your manhood. You've shown Daddy that, you're a bigger man than he is. It must have been hell, George, when you went to Andover, and all over the walls inside that exclusive prep school were pictures of your all-star, nationally recognized baseball dad, huh? It must have been hell knowing that your father was in combat and you were a coward. Okay, George, isn't it time to give America and the rest of the world a breather here, a break? Why don't you resign? Why don't the Democrats impeach him? This is some kind of a sick, almost Greek tragedy working its way out. It so far has cost the lives of hundreds of thousands of people because George W. Bush wants to prove his is bigger than his father's. And this is the only way he knows how to do it. Well, I think most people who are activist Democrats, who are Democrats because we understand where the Republicans are going, they're going to straight to their own personal psycho hell. Most activist Democrats have had enough of this. And it will happen. If the Democratic Party leadership doesn't pay attention to this, they will be out on their asses. It will be 2 years and out. Pelosi, Reid, all of you. There is a surge going on in this country of religious fanaticism that is anti-science, anti-life. It's pro-war, pro-death. It's personified by this sick bastard Pat Robertson. We saw its ugly hand in the execution of this poor, miserable dictator, Saddam Hussein. Good God in heaven! Is that what a civilized country does? I'm telling you, and I'm only speaking for Mike Malloy, but I swear to these Democrats who are taking over tomorrow, you better do something, and you better do it fast. You've got the American public behind you, and if you don't do it, we will take you out of office in 08, and it'll be probably never when you get back. You better pay attention. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Bush is going to have to be watched very closely by somebody. I don't know. When Nixon was going crazy, the old war criminal and mass murderer Henry Kissinger notified the Joint Chiefs of Staff that any order to launch nuclear weapons by Richard Nixon was to not be followed, and that he, Kissinger, should be notified immediately that Nixon was trying to do that. Bush, I think Bush is crazy. Nixon was a very intelligent man, understood world politics. He was a megalomaniac and a drunk, an active drunk, and just totally eaten alive by his his Quaker upbringing and his warlike, hate-filled politics. He was a red baiter. He was just, I don't know. Nixon is unique, I think, in American, certainly in presidential politics. Bush is a common street thug, an ignorant, stupid little man who has all sorts of demons eating at him because of the psycho family that he comes from, especially his parents. There's no telling what could happen here. In that vein, the Pentagon has decided to send a second aircraft carrier and its escort ships to the Persian Gulf. They say it's a warning to Syria and Iran and to give commanders more flexibility in the region. Huh? The USS John Stennis Strike Force is to be deployed this month. It will put 5,000 more U.S. sailors in the region, bringing the total to 16,000. The USS Dwight Eisenhower aircraft carrier group entered the Gulf in December. Pentagon spokesman declined to comment. They don't talk about ship movements. Jesus Christ. Well, in a time of war against the Germans and the Japanese, I guess not. Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. We're in somebody's hallucinatory the dream scene here. You know, we're all playing. That's right. We're playing the greatest war in the history of mankind, the Christians versus the Muslims. That's, excuse me. Of course, we're not going to talk about where our battle groups are going. Oh, my God. So these are dangerous times. These are extremely dangerous times. I think Robert Perry wrote something about that recently, the first couple of months. When the Democrats take over, now, this may be the method behind the what I consider to be the idiocy of Nancy Pelosi in saying, well, we're not going to impeach him. And I've said this before, and a lot of people have said it. It's not up to Nancy Pelosi. It's up to the U.S. Constitution. Nancy Pelosi is supposed to be an instrument of the U.S. Constitution. Hell, for that matter, so's Bush. So's every sworn officer of the United States government. They're supposed to be agents of the United States Constitution. That's in the oath they all take. But Pelosi, I guess, figures she either she figures she's the Constitution has been so trashed by Bush, why bother? Or maybe, could be, you never know. Somebody has gotten Pelosi and Reid in a bar someplace and said, look, don't push this psycho bastard. Don't push him. He will launch nukes. If you start impeachment hearings against this psycho bastard, he will launch nukes against somebody. North Korea, Iran, somebody. So don't push him. So I, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning when I sit bolt upright in bed and go, oh, my God, where am I living? I sometimes get that thought. Okay, you know, you're really riding hard on Pelosi and Reid. Maybe they know a hell of a lot more about this than you do, Malloy, and maybe the reason they're holding back is because they know they're dealing with a sick, potentially psychopath, just mass killer. He's already proved that he will lie a country into war. He doesn't care how much death. He doesn't care what people are saying. His political support is practically disappeared. He doesn't care. These are the actions in a leader of a true sociopath or psychopath. Take your pick. I think the two terms are interchangeable at this point. Don't email me the dictionary definitions. I don't care anymore. He's one or the other, or both. Millions of people around this planet told him not to do it to begin with. Oh, screw them. And now look what has happened. Look what has happened. So, you know, maybe Reid and Pelosi have been told by, like, the guy who wrote Bush on the Couch. There's a great essay, or interview, I'm sorry, at BuzzFlash with that writer. I'm drawing a blank on his name. Go to BuzzFlash.com. They've been around since 2000, and the person who conducted the interview, one of the founders of BuzzFlash, said this is probably the most important interview they've ever conducted. Go read it. I want to add this, and we're getting ready to go to your phone calls. This is under the heading, Bush's photo op snubbed by the Ford family. And it says, the children of the late President Gerald Ford spent every hour of public viewing in the United States Capitol to greet tens of thousands of everyday Americans who came to pay tribute to their father. When President George W. Bush showed up, the Ford children were nowhere to be seen. According to a Capitol Hill source, Bush is the only person to have the rotunda cleared for his visit, bringing a screeching halt to the public's visit to the casket. Other former presidents and political VIPs went to the front of the line, but nonetheless greeted fellow mourners while paying their condolences. Further, Bush reportedly spent only 7 seconds at the casket and promptly left the building. While the nation, including Democrats and Republicans alike, joined together in honoring the service and life of former President W., doesn't seem to get it. Instead, he seems to just be going through the motions. Yeah, well, of course. I mean, this is what a sociopath... Bush is no more, excuse me, capable of demonstrating empathy or compassion or pity or sadness. He doesn't care. Every time he talks about dead American soldiers, I don't know, I want to pull my teeth out. I just get so angry because he couldn't care less. Well, so the Ford family, in their own way, within the cocoon of their grief, told George W. Bush to go screw himself. Good for you, Ford family. Ah, man. And the Saddam Hussein strangulation, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to talk about that. I really don't. Now I hear that three members of this fake, phony-ass Iraqi government have been arrested and charged with what? Assault with a cell phone camera? What happened in that execution chamber was specifically and exactly what this little pissant in the White House wanted to happen. And when the American military executive branch of the government, when American leadership says that the law was, all they were concerned about was the law being followed, were concerned the execution, how dare they? These rat bastards, these are the people who have locked God knows how many up in Guantanamo. These are people deny every sort of legal protection, whether it is ours or international law or Geneva Conventions. The United States government and the United States military at the highest levels have urinated all over every form of law, international, domestic, walls, laws governing the conduct in wars, all of it. And then these people have the audacity to say that they just wanted to make sure that the law was followed where concerned Saddam Hussein. Oh, for God's sake! And we're supposed to sit here like Wolf Blitzer and lap it up and go, yeah, well, that's right, uh-huh. That's all we cared about, that the law be followed. We rendition people to places where they can be tortured. And yet where it concerns this Saddam Hussein dictator, the U.S. is now saying, well, okay, so it was kind of a crappy execution, but you know. Well, what did Tony Snow say today? Seems like everybody's worried about his last 6 minutes. What about his first 69 years? Ah, screw you, Tony.
Country of deep compassion. We care. One of the great things about America, one of the beauties of our country, is that when we see a young, innocent child blown up by an IED, we cry.
Yeah. Jesus. 21 past the hour. Let's do some phone calls here before we have the break at the bottom of the hour. Sanchez is calling from Montebello, California. Sanchez, welcome to the show.
That's just got me so infuriated. You playing that little Bush sound pipe right now? No, he doesn't. He doesn't even. He's so detached from death. And because of Bush on the couch, Mike, that man is so detached from death, he chuckles.
I know. It's just unbelievable.
I need to calm down here for a second because I wasn't going to start with that opening. You played that little song bite and it got me off. Let me calm down here for a moment to please, please wish you and Kathy, your family, and all the listeners, even all the people listening on all the little affiliates right now, the board ops, everybody, Happy New Year, but please fasten your safety belts because this is going to be a bumpy year for us, Mike.
Yeah, I think it is, Sanchez. I really do.
Oh, man. And Kathy, I know you're listening, and I know you used to be a nurse, but if this phone line drops dead at any point in this conversation, it's because I'm having a stroke. So please, somebody call 911 here.
No,
Mike, you warned me. You told me in our last phone conversation I was going to go insane. No, it's gone past that point. I'm absolutely livid, man.
Yeah, well, better to be livid than be insane, you know. Maybe there's nothing wrong with insane. Insanity is almost a refuge.
Oh,
a refuge
no,
now.
Insanity brings clarity, okay? Because we're all thinking outside the box. All these other people are thinking in such a tiny little box right now, and that includes all these massive lumps of brain-dead flesh that continue to follow Pat Robertson and Ted Hager and all these people that have twisted this dogma for centuries. If there were a God, Mike, honest to God, if there were a God, he would strike these people down in a lightning bolt this very moment because they are such hypocrites, and they've twisted it all around. So, again, oh, God, I got to calm down. I'm so livid.
I hear you.
But look, I told you this story. And let me tie this to what we were talking about with Wesley Autry saving the man in the subway.
Yeah.
This is my take on this. I know you're going to have trouble with this, but I don't believe in a God per se the way these people do, but I do believe in guardian angels. And what I think happened was for that very second that it took to hit the bottom of the brainstem of Wesley Autry, it was the other guy, the guy that fell in that had the seizure. It was his guardian angel that jumped into his body for that very second and prompted him to jump down there and save that man. It was the other guy's guardian angel, the same guardian angel, Mike. I told you this story.
Well, Sanchez, you know, like I said, I will quote John Lennon, whatever gets you through the night. I don't want to offend you, but
You're not offending me. But look, I told you this story.
Guardian Schmardian. Let's talk to me about Stay the Course.
Okay, look. I told you the story about my brother and how he was nearly killed in Iraq.
You did.
Air America. Okay,
you did, yes.
You know all that story. Okay,
I do. And as far as any sort of supernatural or paranormal intervention, no. A million times no. Whatever circumstances protect or seem to protect someone are circumstances only. There's nothing magical or mystical about them. I'm sorry, Sanchez. You live in a material world. You live in a physical world. There are no spooks who are watching over everybody going, here, let me save this baby, but I'll let that one die.
By all rights, Mike, you didn't see the pictures of the demolished truck that my brother was riding in.
I didn't, but okay. I have seen people walk away from head-on collisions where a vehicle winds up looking like an envelope, and they don't have any illusions as to a guardian angel. What they realize is that somehow, some way, the circumstances were such that they weren't just sliced and diced into a bloody stain on the highway.
Yeah.
Now, that's, you know, let's talk about something else, Sanchez.
Stay the course. This is the reason why I'm calling. It's for the benefit of people like my brother. I wish when he came back he could have been more like Paul Hackett and his vocal, but he's not. He's a simple truck driver. But because of all the pressures and because of the stay the course thing, if this were a card game, and this is how I'm putting it right now, the card that flipped over last year, the final week of November, was the card where Dick Cheney was summoned to Saudi Arabia by the Saudi royal family, and he was given that dictation. And we know that he's been dictated. We've had foreign policy dictation before, but That was the card that flipped over, and everything since that card has put us in the stay the course in camouflage direction. He's not even, he doesn't even give a damn about what the voters talk about. And you notice no Democrat has even acknowledged that that's the reason why we're there. But we're all there to put bread, to put butter on King Abdullah's bread at this point. And I've tried to speak my piece on all the shows, and at this point, I'm starting to get flack from people that are saying I'm trying to demoralize the troops here. Hell no, I'm just speaking the truth here.
I see the truth, man. I know you do. Sanchez, I got to leave it there. I appreciate your passion. I appreciate your passion. I'm glad you called in. Just be careful with that angel stuff, okay?
Happy New Year to you anyway.
All right, Sanchez, you too. Take care. We'll be back, Truth Seekers. Stay with us.
I'm afraid I can't help it. I'm afraid I can't. I'm afraid of America. I'm afraid of the world. I'm afraid I can't help it.
Border to border and coast to coast, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
Welcome back. 26 before the hour. All right, I want to squeeze in some of the sound, and then we'll come to your phone calls. Let's begin here with... This sick, mentally ill person in the White House, President Chucklenuts, after his first cabinet meeting of 2007. Funny thing, listening to Weak and Stupid talk about his legislative agenda for 2007, talking about ending programs his Bush crime family lieutenants put in place, it just kind of makes your head, I don't know, your skull start to reverb. You know, all of a sudden, he's a Democrat? Who'd have thunk it?
One important message we all should take from the elections is that people want to end the secretive process by which Washington insiders are able to get billions of dollars directed to projects.
Secretive?
Many of them pork barrel projects that have never been reviewed or voted on by the Congress.
Like Halliburton?
Earmarks often divert precious funds from vital priorities. Like national defense.
Poor defense department.
And each year they cost the taxpayers billions of dollars. I appreciate the fact that Senator Byrd and Congressman Obie, the Democrats who will lead the appropriations process in the new Congress, heard the same message.
Oh,
I also appreciate the fact that House Republicans last fall passed strong earmark reform idea. Put forth earmark reform ideas.
Yeah, put forth. Put forth, you lying little rat. They didn't pass anything. What does he say he wants to end? One important message we should take from the elections is that people want to end the secretive process by which Washington insiders are able to get billions of dollars directed to projects. Can you believe this little rat bastard stands there and says that when it's him, his vice president, his party, the members of Congress, the ones that are still there, Tom DeLay, all the rest of these right-wing Republican Nazi thugs who have done this, and Bush stands there and says, oh, yeah, the secretive process, got to end that. Many of them, he says, pork barrel projects that have never been reviewed or voted on by Congress.
Okay, George, yeah, God, I'm just, you're, okay.
Earmarks, he says, often divert precious funds from vital priorities like national defense. Oh, the poor Department of Defense, always underfunded, huh? What do we spend? What is a defense budget? A defense budget? Is it $500 billion a year yet? Oh, poor babies. Oh, you poor miserable bastards. You only have $480 billion to play with this year. Oh, well, let's cut some of those school lunch programs for Christ's sake. No more highway fund money. Let's sell the highways off to companies in Japan and Sweden. That'll work. Oh, my God. And he says, Democrats who will lead the appropriations process heard the same message. Yeah, they're following your lead, Mr. Halfwit? Oh, my God. I couldn't believe that. You know, I just decided, Kathy was gone today. She said, record this off of the CNN pipeline for me while I'm, okay. So I'm in the studio and I'm recording. Well, what the hell, I'll sit here and watch this. And then he says this, all of a sudden he's a uniter, not a decider. He's a uniter. Bush wants to work with the Democrats for a bright new future.
The Congress has changed. Our obligations to the country haven't changed. Tomorrow, members of the 110th Congress will take their oaths of office, and I congratulate them. I welcome their arrival into town. I'm looking forward to working with them.
Oh, yeah.
And so are members of my cabinet.
Uh-huh.
We've all been entrusted with public office.
Yeah.
At a momentous time in our nation's history.
Yeah.
And together we have important things to do.
Uh-huh.
It's time to set aside politics and focus on the future.
It's time to set aside politics. You rat bastard. You neocons are all about brotherly love, huh? It's time to set aside politics. No, it isn't, George. It's time to bring the hammer down. It's time to apply politics like they've never been applied before. It's time to run you and your criminal crew out of office. No, it's not time to not stop with the politics. Now's the time to really apply the pressure. Like you're going to respond? Of course you're not. So we have to remove you from office, George. You have got to go, dude. Time to stop playing politics. Oh, my God. Now, to go from the ridiculous to the obscene, let's go to Tony Snow, the Fox News Channel reject, who is the press secretary at the press briefing today. First one of 2007. Oh, I love firsts, don't you? He gets asked about the inappropriate leaking of the Saddam execution video. In that regard, a reporter says, Tony, does the president think that Saddam Hussein's execution was handled appropriately?
Our officials have said they would have, you heard General Caldwell say, would have done it differently. The Iraqi government apparently has some qualms about some of the behavior of people within, and they're taking a look as well. He apparently, according to General Caldwell, thanked the jailers for their treatment of him. It was handed over to the Iraqi government. There were some, the embassy expressed some concerns. The Iraqis listened to those concerns. They've carried it forward. And I think it's interesting because there seems to be a lot of concern about the last 2 minutes of Saddam Hussein's life and less about the first 69 in which he murdered hundreds of thousands of people. That's why he was executed.
Oh, you bastard.
And the government is investigating the conduct of some people within the chamber. And I think we leave it at that.
No, you sick son of a bitch. There's not a lot of concern about the last 2 minutes of his life and less about the first 69 in which he murdered hundreds of thousands of people. What we're concerned about is something you neocon right-wingers will never understand, Tony. It's called rule of law. And when somebody has been convicted and sentenced to hang or be electrocuted or be injected, whatever barbaric form of death we're going to dump on that person, because, oh, Jesus, we're a Christian nation, and we love executions. You know, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. No, sorry, Lord. Uh-uh. Vengeance is George Bush's.
Oh, but Mike, it was done in Iraq by Iraqis.
Yeah. Sure it was. So spin it, Tony. You nauseous bastard. Go ahead, spin it. Oh, there's more concern about his last 2 minutes. And I'll tell you why that is, Tony, because the last 2 minutes of his life reflects on you and your administration and the United States of America and our concept of justice and what it's like to be an occupier in a country that has no government, that has no system of justice, that has nothing. That's why it's important, Tony. My God. So this punk keeps trying to gloss over the humiliation of this dictator's execution. Iraq in chaos, and no one in the Bush crime family will admit it. They are so out of touch with reality. The reporter says, so if you want to move forward in Iraq, Tony, you must have national reconciliation. And if the Iraqi government is allowing the execution to become a spectacle, with opposition Iraqi shouting...
Our officials have said they would have, you heard General Caldwell say, would have done it.
All right, let's try that. Hold it. All right, let's... Okay, let's get this soundbite. The question, if you want to move forward in Iraq, you must have national reconciliation. And if the Iraqi government is allowing the execution to become a spectacle with opposition Iraqi shouting...
Describe the spectacle.
Well, there was cell phone video in there. There were people shouting, Muqtada, Muqtada. I mean, that's about as far from national reconciliation.
Well, and I think it's the government's made it clear that they understand that reconciliation is going to be a critical piece.
That shows that there's somebody in that government with connections to Al-Qaeda.
It's hard to say. Let them do their... I mean, they're doing an investigation here. I think it's worth taking a look at.
Oh, you smart ass. You smart ass. Describe the spectacle. Yeah, you missed it, right, Tony? We got time to play this next one? No? All right. This is obscene. Whatever, you know, there's a difference. Who sent me? It's an essay written at tvnewslies.org. At the blog spot. Don't confuse brutal with evil. And I agree with this. I don't know if I have time to share it with you tonight or not, but it's at tvnewslies.org, I'm sure. All right, we'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
The fact is there's these people that they said they had to bomb, when in fact it was just a wedding. The fact is there's these prisoners buried in the sand, mass murdered in containers. The fact is, in Afghanistan, more died than in New York.
Here in Washington, we're now determining the size.
Hail Caesar! This is what you're fighting for.
If you could talk to me, what news would you bring? Our voices in the sky.
It's about 10 before the hour. Tony Snow's briefing today. David Gregory followed up with this question about exactly how out of touch Bush is where it concerns the reality in Iraq. Gregory says, Tony, the larger point about reconciliation that we're bringing up, which is this threshold question for this administration, is do they want it, reconciliation? And if you watch this video of the hanging and you watch the ongoing violence, you come to the conclusion that Iraqis appear to be more interested in killing each other, settling scores, the politics of division, than they are informing a democratic government that we wish for them to have. The president has been determined, he's been resolved, nobody doubts that, but does he get it? I mean, is he fundamentally out of touch with what is the reality on the ground in Iraq?
No, I think what happens is we may be out of touch with reality because we sit around and we look at fractional pictures on the screen. This is the president who gets exhausted of briefings on a daily basis about the situation. He knows more than anybody in this room about what's going on there.
Oh!
And as commander-in-chief, he also has solemn and important obligations to to deal with the situation properly as the commander-in-chief and as somebody who's committed to a way forward that's going to create the independent and free and democratic Iraq. So, no, the president does get it. One of the reasons why he has demanded options on a better way forward is that he understands, getting back to your earlier questions about sectarian strife, the Baghdad security plan didn't produce. You need to find a way to have an effective Baghdad security plan. But the president also, we'll make this absolutely clear, is committed to winning.
Oh, my God. Listen to this. Are you listening to this? Yeah, it's those damn TV screens, right? You and I are sitting here looking at fractional pictures on the screen. We're out of touch with reality, not Bush. TVs are bad showing all that death and stuff. Thank God Bush is there with the truth. That's what Pickles told us. Thank God things are going well in Iraq. He says the president does get it. The president knows more than anybody in this room about what is going on there. Oh, my God. And Tony Snow stands there with a straight face and says this. Tony Snow says the president does get it. One of the reasons why he's demanded options on a better way forward is because his pappy and Jim Baker and Kissinger ordered it. Oh, no, no. It's because he understands the Baghdad security plan didn't produce. It didn't produce? What does that mean, it didn't produce? We're not talking about a cornfield here, you evil bastard. We're not talking about a stock, issuing of stock. We're talking about human beings being blown to pieces, Americans and Iraqis, and you call that a plan that didn't produce. And it begs the question, and nobody at this toy press conference, and even David Gregory is starting to get on my nerves. Nobody says, okay, Tony, if he gets it, as you say, what's his solution, Tony? It appears to be throw more bodies onto the pyre. Throw more human beings into this death machine that Bush seems to get sexually aroused talking about. That'll work. Great plan. Works so damn well in Vietnam, didn't it, huh? He gets it. He gets it. And finally, on the Guantanamo torture station, FBI reports that have recently been revealed documenting even more abuses and showing that the FBI was aware of these abuses long before they were originally reported. This reporter says, Tony, what's your reaction to the reports of more prisoner abuse at Guantanamo Bay that's appearing in these FBI documents? Listen to this.
These are not new documents. I'd refer you to the Pentagon, but the fact is, you remember a couple of years ago there were stories about FBI reports?
Yeah.
This is that story.
Oh.
They've all been thoroughly investigated, and in cases where there were abuses, those responsible have been prosecuted.
Oh.
So, I'm afraid it's a really old story, and it was irresponsible to get dredged up as something new.
Yeah, it's old torture, you dumb bastard reporter. Why don't you boys just sit down? You can't get over me. Come on, it's old torture. Why talk about it now? Same old feces-smeared pyramids and fake menstrual blood facials and tired old waterboarding and electrodes and ripping people's thumbnails off. It's so hard for you boys to find new torture stories these days, right? Damn those unreliable TVs yet again. Oh, I don't know where these reports are coming from. Oh, my God, these are old torture stories. You know, somebody gets their testicles squashed in a vice. Oh, please, that happened 8, 10, 12 months ago. Oh, my God. You people have a lot of nerve. Is this what your newspapers pay you all this money for, is to come in here and ask me questions about torture stories that are old? These are old stories. Castrations, tongues being pulled out, eyes gouged. Yeah, urinating on the Quran. Squatting over their holy prayer books and dropping drops of what appears to be menstrual blood on them. Ah, come on. Those are old stories. What the hell's wrong with you? Waterboarding, drowning people, flying them off to Syria, you know, our hated enemy, or Egypt, our other hated enemy, or Israel, or where our great ally, or wherever we send them to where they can be tortured. Ah, old stuff. Old stuff. Come on, boys. Get some new stuff. Jesus, God. Well, I'll tell you what. We have the top of the hour break here, and when we come back, we're going to take your phone calls, and that's all we're going to do for the remaining hour of the program. Stick around, okay? Huh? Isn't this fun? Isn't this a great way to start the new year? I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Ron in Briarwood, New York, wants me to mention that the heroism of Wesley Autry, the story we mentioned earlier tonight, the man who saved the life of the college student who fell as a result of a fit of some sort onto the subway tracks, that occurred, I said Midtown Manhattan, and Ron wants me to point out that Mr. Autry's act of heroism, he writes, occurred in the subway station at 137th Street in Harlem. They get enough bad press in Harlem. I just thought this positive story should be reported accurately. Okay. Fair enough. Not living in New York, I sometimes think of all of Manhattan as like the center of all five boroughs. So Midtown Manhattan to me is almost redundant. But anyway, thanks for the correction. All right, let's do your phone calls, starting like right now. Will is calling from Michigan. Thanks for holding on, Will. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Same to you.
I happen to Google the story about Mr. Autry, and he said he was relying on his military training.
Yes, Navy.
And, I'm just taking a guess here, but I think he was a medic because the military usually doesn't train people to save lives unless they're medics.
Really? Well, maybe his reference was to acting in a courageous way without giving it a whole lot of thought. I don't know. It's an interesting, never having been in the service myself, I can't speak to the issue or what he meant. I'm sure you can because you've been there and done that.
Right. What I called to talk about was this surge and accelerate nonsense that Bush is talking about. I'm not even going to discuss sending more troops to Iraq because, you know, we all know the stupidity of that. But he mentioned reconstruction and creating jobs.
Uh-huh.
And I think under this, with the Bush crime family in power, that would be a disaster, too. You remember back in October what happened at Camp Falcon? Well, we're looking at more of the same
Refresh us. What happened at Camp Falcon just very quickly because I'm drawing a blank.
Back in October, in fact, you talked about it on your show. The ammo dump got hit by mortar fire.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay. Yeah, I just lost the train of thought on Camp Falcon. Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
I mean, this was a military base that was built with the help of Iraqi nationals, and that obviously gave the opposition an opportunity to do covert reconnaissance, because they obviously knew where the ammo dump was.
Right.
And we're just looking at more of the same because the Bush crime family's idea of reconstruction in Iraq is building permanent military bases.
That's right.
And so reconstruction and creating more jobs means building permanent military bases and hiring Iraqi nationals to do the labor.
They're incredibly stupid, aren't they? These Bush thugs. They're just, and I don't understand what has happened to the upper levels of the military. Now, you being a veteran, you can make the argument that the upper levels of the military have always been dumbasses. But on the other hand, there have been strategic planners and thinkers, as well as tactical planners and thinkers. And the strategic thinking behind allowing people whose country we have invaded to come in and build our military bases, this is insane. This is crazy. Where did this kind of thinking come from? I know, it's more of that privatization bullcrap, right?
Yep.
It's astonishing, Will. I just can't get my mind around it. I just can't do it.
Neither can I, and I've been there.
Yeah. All right. Well, Will, thanks for checking in, pal. I appreciate what you had to say. Okay.
Thanks.
All right. You take care. Sarge is calling from Mississippi. Hey, Sarge.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing all right, sir. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. By the way, the guy's name is Dr. Justin A. Frank. Quite a fellow. I talked to him before the year ended, and I was going to interview him, and I haven't been able to get back to it. But
that's the one that wrote Bush on the Couch?
Right, and he is a Malloy listener, I found out.
You're kidding.
Yeah, when I talked to him, it's just kind of funny, but I was all excited about getting to talk to him because he, I respect the man.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm sitting there waiting for him to say something, and he says, "This is Sarge." I said, "Yeah." He says, the one that calls on the Malloy show?" I said, "Yeah."
I'll be damned.
He says, "Man, I respect you." I said, "Golly cow, this is too much, man. Here I am in awe of this guy, and he's virtually doing the same thing." And
I know, it's funny how that works.
It was really cool, but he is a wonderful guy. I talked with him, and he told me, he said, "I studied the man so close," he said, "it actually scared me." He said, I got to looking at how his brain works, and it just really got to where it scared me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you think about that. If that doesn't scare you, what the hell will?
I know. I think Randy Rhodes has had him on. I have not had him on as a guest, but I think maybe we'll make an effort, because it's just getting so beyond belief that Bush is talking about this so-called surge and the rest of this crap, when anyone with any experience regarding Iraq or Vietnam will now say this is insane. This is literally, mm-hmm. it's not, oh, let's call him crazy. It's really crazy.
Yeah, this is Hitler crazy type of stuff, where you're ordering non-existent forces into battle and
yeah.
You're getting results that's not even taking place, let alone happening as you think it is.
Well, let me ask you the same question I just asked Will, who calls from Michigan, who's also a veteran, and I think both you guys have seen enough combat to maybe answer this question. What in the hell is going on with these strategic military planners in Iraq? That they're allowing this talk and this madman to do something that anyone, I would assume, anyone in the military understands that in order to pacify, and that's what the only thing you could call it, Iraq, would probably take as many troops as we had in Vietnam at the height of that war, which was approaching 600,000. What has happened to the upper levels of the military, Sarge?
Well, it's simple. I say it's simple. It is for me. When you look at it, this man does not allow dissent. He does not allow anybody to contradict what he wants to do.
But arguably, it's always been that way. The military receives its orders from civilian leadership and carries them out. But what I'm saying is,
yeah, but we've never had a president that was so dogmatic as this one. You know, this guy, he's not going to hear it. What was the general's name that got fired because he said they needed too many troops? And
oh yeah, Shinseki, yeah.
Okay, see, now there's an example of what's going to happen. Then you've got the one that was a 30-year man who had been an enlisted man, rose to the ranks, became a general. He said something they didn't like. Boom, he's gone. It's like what I wish my friend David Hackworth was still alive, because I think he probably would come closest to answering that. But it's called perfume princes. You promote the ones that's going to follow your pattern. And
perfume,
as long as
perfume
follow,
prince, a perfume prince.
Perfume princes is what David Hackworth called it.
Yeah.
It's the plural term. But this guy's crazy.
Hold on, Sarge. Okay. Hold on. I got to do a break. We'll come back and finish this up on the other side of the break. This is Nova M Radio. Stay with us.
I've gotten talking to the Lord, but my thoughts would be busy, busy hatching if I only had a brain.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Before we go back to Sarge here, Michael, from Canada, I believe, as a military man, and if the fellow was in the military, referring to the guy that the hero at the subway today, as a military man, that guy, and if the fellow was in the military, then he has a sense of mission before self. If you are not in, or we're in the MOB, I guess that's military operating base or mission operating base, you won't get it. You are taken over with mission before self. Sometimes, regrettably, it costs you your life. All right, thanks for that. Sarge, back to Sarge now. Where were we? Sarge?
Yes.
Yeah, where were we?
You were talking about what's wrong with the leadership. I just got thought about a fellow that could answer your question a lot better than I could. Leonard Clark, he's the guy that called him from Iraqi war veteran,
mm-hmm.
and my Iraq specialist at unreportednews.net. Because he wrote a blog while he was over there, and he was the first one busted for writing such a blog. So he can tell you a lot more about that than I can about today. So if Leonard's listening, which he probably is, I'm sure he'll give you a call and fill you in on it. But it's there's a lot to it. I don't have enough time in the phone call to tell you. But, the craziness is what's killing our troops. It's the craziness. And that's what we Americans have got to do. We've got to get on the phone. It's the same thing down here with Katrina. They are not taking care of anything. They're not taking care of America's business.
Right.
And we've got to get on the phone. I know we're always saying call, 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 and you wonder if they're listening, and you know, but we just got to keep doing it until we see that these Democrats are not going to make their stand. Then we'll have to go to the next step. But we really have to say we want investigations in Katrina. We want investigations into Iraq. And we've got to call them. Hey, if they get to know them on a first-hand basis like I do, fine. But we've got to do it, man. We've got to do it.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. All right, thanks,
Sarge. Thank you, Mike.
Bye-bye. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you checking in. AJ, the Music Factory, is calling from New York.
Yes, sir. How are you tonight?
I'm all right, AJ. How are you?
Oh, pretty good, Mike. You know, what a pleasure it is to follow Sarge. Wow, that's how cool is that? I didn't expect that.
Yeah.
Bush is mad, you know.
Yes, yes.
And I'm trying to figure out whether he's mad because he's snapped, or there's another dimension to this. I grew up in an alcoholic home. So I'm no more expert on addiction than anybody else who grew up in a home like that is. But to me, this looks like a user.
Yeah, and a lot of people have been saying that. Yeah.
Yeah, and so much so that it's almost unfair to evaluate him, because if you knew someone like this in normal everyday life, you'd say, well, I'm not going to judge him by normal standards because, you know, he's using or he's crazy or whatever. You know, this is why people are in court and they say I was insane when I committed that crime. But I think Bush goes to another level because I think he's evil. And this whole talk about sacrifice, you know, makes me wonder when are we going to see the Bush bitches in fatigues? When are they going to pony up? You know, guys like Sarge and all these guys who put themselves on the line. I never have, and for real complicated reasons, and I never will. It's just not me. I can't do it. But these people who are sending other people's children, starting with the guy at the top, starting with that guy where the buck stops, when are we going to see those mall chicks with guns strapped to them fighting in Iraq?
Never. And you know why. You know, these people, I'm referring to Bush and Cheney and the rest of them, they play soldier. They play soldier with other people's lives, other people's family members. They are cowards. And the cowardice extends to their own family. They're not interested in people they know going off to serve the country. That's for the idiots to do. That's for the rubes to do.
Yeah.
You know, promise them a scholarship. Ha ha ha. When they get out, you know, make them go. We don't have to go. We're rich white people. We don't have to go. So, you know, I know you're asking the question rhetorically, but when will any...
And the whole thing makes me vomit, and that's why, you know, I've been listening, obviously I listen to you, I've been listening to you for years, and Olbermann had another great slam last night, and the two of you guys are like a soothing balm on all of this, and I don't want to overstate it, but it's so good to have people state this stuff with some clarity and with some forthrightness. And what you were talking about earlier in the program about, you know, your Apocalypse Now reference,
yeah,
please keep that up, because the American public,
I'll do it. AJ, I hate to cut you off, but I got...
And I can look you in the eye and tell you, I feel I've tried to solve the problem diplomatically to the max and would have committed troops both in Afghanistan and Iraq, knowing what I know today.
Yeah, okay. A couple emails here very quickly. Abby writes in, I think the reason for the surge that Bush is proposing is the following. Bush's handlers know the war cannot be won, but they need to blame it on the Democrats. So they propose an increase in troops, which the Democrats will oppose. Sometime thereafter, they would declare failure and blame the Democrats for refusing the troop increase. If the Democrats, for some reason, acquiesce, The Republicans can keep repeating this strategy until the Democrats finally do refuse, and shortly thereafter they will declare failure. Something like this happened toward the end of Vietnam. And for decades after, thereafter, the right-wing nuts blamed the peaceniks for the failure. Yeah, it's an old trick. This is from Lupe. Mike, for information, this is regarding seizure or fit. The term fit, when it comes to seizures, is considered derogatory by some. Personally, the term doesn't bother me at all. I used to have seizures, and people can be cruel. People can say anything they want to at any time. Oftentimes it was nasty. So what? Whether intentional or not is of no concern. You're dubbing it fit has no intended malice, I'm sure. On the plus side of the condition, you learn about people's nature when you have a seizure in front of them. Some become nasty or cold afterwards, displaying fear. Others are compassionate. In a sense, the seizures were a tool to help me figure out a person's credibility or compassion. I just thought you should know for your own information. Thanks, Luffy. Back to your phone calls. Cassie is calling from Texas. Hey, Cassie. Hey, Cassie.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
Okay. Did that work?
Yes. Everything's working fine. Talk to me.
Okay. I was calling to tell you that I am going to be part of the thing that Sarge and Jim Yancey talked to you about yesterday.
Yeah,
where they're collecting a bunch of stuff in Phoenix to go. And
uh-huh.
We're going to have a truck that's going to start in Little Elm, which is north of Dallas, and come down through Austin and maybe San Antonio. It depends if we find people there to donate. And we are looking for people to donate appliances. We don't have a telephone in the wall anymore. We just have cell phones.
Yeah.
So we're going to give our telephones. And we're trying to get the different apartments, the apartment offices, to give the old appliances when they upgrade.
Wow, that's a great idea, Cassie.
And I'm going to try and get people at my school to see what else we can get donated. And we just got a washer and a dryer.
Oh, my God.
Which is why... That's why we're starting in Little Elm.
Now,
that's where the washer and dryer is.
Why did you start doing this? You heard about what Sarge is doing?
Because I talked to Sarge in the chat room and stuff, and been trying to see what we can do. Because do you know Gira?
I do not.
She's a friend of Sarge's, and she's been in a couple of the chat rooms too. And she lives in a really horrible trailer.
Uh-huh.
A FEMA trailer, and it smells like formaldehyde, and people can break into them with, like, a little tire iron, like the kind you have in the back of your car.
Yeah.
People can break into each other, so it's not safe, and it's just horrible, and she can't get an apartment, and she has a job there, but she can't get a job anywhere else and move. And just hearing about how, you know, they don't have furniture.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're just sitting on the floor, and there's, like, whole families in these trailers that smell bad, and they don't have, they can't, they, oh, the other thing they need is the space heaters.
Right.
Because it's, there's not insulated.
Uh-huh. So from talking with Sarge in the chat room and doing your own research, you decided to do this. Just to put together your own operation?
Well, no. There's a lady in Austin.
Yeah.
Named Betsy, and she's doing a bunch also. She's the one who had the idea about the apartment complexes.
Right.
And she teaches at a high school, and I go to a high school.
Uh-huh.
And her kid goes to a middle school, so that's three schools already.
Wow.
That we can talk to, and then she's also going to talk to her synagogue, and we're going to talk to a church, and we're going to see how much we can get done. But
Cassie, it's
horrible that people don't have anything, and it's like it's more than a year later.
I certainly agree with you on that. I was just thinking, I'm just sitting here thinking about how wonderful it is what you're doing. How old are you again? Tell us again.
I'm 15 now.
How old are you now?
Now I'm 15.
Oh, you're all the way up to 15 already.
I was 14 when I talked to you in the spring.
Yeah, I know. My God. All right. So what kind of what do you want to tell people? What are you looking for here? Tell me.
Well, people should go to either Sarge's site or they should go to jccsc.org.
Right.
It doesn't have the information for Texas yet. It just has the information for the truck from Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
Because we didn't set up the truck from Texas yet. But once we get that, we're going to have our own Texas website about the trip going down and maybe try and get the Air America station here to put, like, an ad on or something.
Mm-hmm.
So that people who listen to Air America but who don't listen to your show, because you're not on in Texas.
Right.
But that the people who listen in Pflugerville and the people who listen in Dallas can hear that we've got this going.
Well, who are you going to contact at Air America?
There's just a phone number for their offices here.
Oh, God. Okay. You're talking about the local affiliate.
Yeah, the Pflugerville office.
Okay. Well, that may be a good thing because
the one north of Austin.
Okay. Because the corporate headquarters in New York they would be no more interested in this than flying to the moon. They're involved in a bankruptcy. They're just not that type of people.
Right.
I hate to say that.
I know.
But I think you know what I'm talking about.
I know. But the Nova M people, and I don't know, when you check your email, I redid the logo that Sarge did.
Uh-huh.
So it's clearer and it's brighter and it's bigger. And then when we make our own website, we're going to put that on our website too.
That's great.
But we're going to put a Texas flag. So there's a Mississippi flag on one side and we're going to put a Texas flag on the other side.
All right.
I've been in a couple of different chat rooms, and I told people I was on hold, and they all want to say hello to you. So.
Okay. All right, Cassie. I don't know what I'm trying to say here. You crack me up, but that gives the wrong impression. I'm just amazed by people like you and people like Sarge and the school teacher who is going to go to her, try to get some help from her synagogue. I mean, people who do this, who listen to the problem, and realize that we live in a country where the government doesn't care about situations like this, and then you do something. You humble me. I mean, I hope my daughter, who's 2 years old, will be doing this sort of thing when she's 60. You're 16 now?
15.
Okay. 15. Well, I hope Molly.
Can I tell you my website?
Yes, tell me.
HTTP, Freckles, Cassie. There's no WWs, but... Cassie.
Okay, it's http://freckles.
Cassie.
Cassie.
.wordpress.com.
.word.
And Cassie, WordPress.
WordPress?
Mm-hmm.
WordPress.com.
Yes.
Okay.
And Cassie is with two S's and no H's and T's or anything.
Okay, let's do it again, very slow.
Freckles?
No, wait, what's the freckles?
That's the name of my blog. When I started the blog, I didn't want people to know if I was a boy or girl, but now I don't care.
Okay, so it's http://freckles.
Uh-huh. Cassie, C-A-S-S-I-E.
Freckles Cassie.
Dot WordPress.
Dot WordPress.
Dot com.
Dot com. All right, let me do it one more time. http://freckles.cassie.wordpress.com.
Perfect.
Okay, Cassie. God, you crack me up. You really do. You're amazing. You're an amazing kid. Do you mind if
Thank
I say
you.
That?
Yes.
No,
I don't mind. It's okay.
Okay. All right, Cassie. Keep us posted. Let us know what's going on the Texas front, okay?
Okay.
Thanks, Cassie.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Oh, my God. Kids like that. Well, between Cassie and Sarge and the other people working with them, I'm saying Cassie and Sarge because they're the only two names I know, but... Cassie, you're a sweetheart. I love that. I just love that. You know, just when you start turning into a cynical old bastard like I have become, you get introduced in a manner of speaking to somebody like Cassie, and you realize, or Sarge, but you know, it's the kid, the kid. Good for you, Cassie. Good for you.
And so, become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on.
For the hour, thanks to Ian Huff in Phoenix, who engineered the program and answered your calls. Also thanks to Chris in Minnesota, Mark Marshall, the moderators at MikeMolloy.com, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Catherine Bay is the executive producer of this program. Back to your phone calls. Tiffany is calling from Sparks, Maryland. Hey, Tiffany.
Hi, Mike. How are you? Happy New Year.
Thank you. Same to you.
Hey, listen, speaking of driving out this criminal regime, we have two very exciting things going on in D.C. tomorrow.
Tell us about them.
Well, tomorrow at noon, they want people to gather in the, I believe it would be the Senate office building, or at least where the new Congress is going to open. It's located in Upper Senate Park on Delaware and Constitution, just north of the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
And they want you to walk the halls of Congress and ask for support of impeachment.
Can people still get into these Senate or House office buildings?
That's a good question, but I'll tell you, there are a lot of people behind this. 911truth.org is, After Downing Street, D.C. Anti-War Network, Democracy Rising, Green Party, Center for Constitutional Rights, ImpeachBush.org, Cynthia McKinney, Gore Vidal, World Can't Wait. A lot of people are going to be there, and I can't imagine they'd have you go if you couldn't, but at the very least, hopefully there will be a big turnout. They're busing people in from New York, too. So there are some other things going on in the evening. Outside of the National Press Club, there is a Voices for Impeachment rally, and speakers are going to include Daniel Ellsberg, Cindy Sheehan, John Nichols, Mike Ratner, Center for Constitutional Rights, Deborah Sweet, and a special message from Gore Vidal as well. And that's located at 529 14th Street Northwest, which is one block east of the White House.
All right. Now, when did these events occur?
They are occurring tomorrow.
Okay. That last one. When is that? You said tomorrow evening.
7 p.m.
Until.
That my dear, I don't know. They don't say.
Okay. Well, the reason I ask, if you're near a cell phone or whatever, if you could call in and let us know what is happening with these events, because obviously we are not going to be there, and I'd like to at least let people know, because these are the kind of events that media in this country don't cover.
No.
It's like it doesn't happen. You know, if it's not on television, it doesn't exist, which is nonsense and a lie and disgusting and criminal and corrupt. So in order to counteract that to any degree, you know, word needs to get out, not just through blogs or Democracy Now!'s website, but also on programs like this one. So if you can, call in tomorrow. Normally, we have a three-day rule here, but we'll waive it for you, Tiffany, so you can call in and let us know what occurred or what is occurring.
Okay.
All right.
I appreciate that. Hey, listen, if anybody wants more information on that, they can go to www.worldcantwait.org.
Right. Worldcantwait.org. Yes.
And you can find all the information about where they're busing people in from New York, where the buses leave from, what time, you know, the whole thing, how much it is. And, you know, everything you need to get there is on worldcantwait.org.
That's a good site to go to. They keep us updated on these sorts of events. So, all right, worldcantwait.org. All right,
yes,
Tiffany,
sir.
Thanks for checking in. I hope hear from you tomorrow, okay?
Love you, Mike. Thanks.
All right, take care. Rocky Mountain Mary is checking in from Connecticut. Mary, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. Happy New Year.
Thank you.
How are you?
I'm doing fine.
How are you, right? Happy New Year.
I'm doing great.
I realize these seem to be a good question. I think I wanted to really focus mostly on one thing, and I'll make it brief, is that, and I guess since this is Atheist Coming Out Night, I'm going to tell you as a scientist that I don't believe in the mythological piece myself. But what I wanted to do is point out, from a clinical sense of view, looking at Saddam Hussein meet his death was a far more dignified picture that I, as a nurse, have ever seen as a man went to meet whatever he considered his maker to be. Mm-hmm. And I hear all these people berating him and sucking on pictures of his demise, and I see nothing but pathology in that.
It's awful. It's awful. Mary, I so agree with you.
I guess at this point I can say we're starting off the new year with more insanity than I thought we could possibly end 2006 with. And the final thing I want to tell you, Mike, is that God has spoke to me too. And what she said is that we haven't seen nothing yet coming up this year.
Oh, God. Oh, no. All right. Well, Rocky Mountain Mary, always good to hear from you.
Wonderful show, Mike, tonight. Thank you so much, as always.
Take care.
You take care. Right. Bye-bye.
All right. Wesley Autry of Manhattan covered the body of a man who had fallen on the subway tracks in Harlem. The man who had fallen on the railroad train tracks happened to be white. Wesley Autry happens to be black. And yeah, in old racist America, you got to mention that aspect. And Wesley Autry held this guy down while the train passed over the two of them, and neither was injured. And Wesley Autry did this as he was standing on the platform, watching, saw the man go down, had his two children with him, 4 and 6, I believe. Turned to someone and said, "Hold my children." Tried to pull the 19-year-old student, Cameron, out of the way of the onrushing train. Couldn't, because he was having a seizure. So he did what I would hope I would do, what you would hope you would do. He pushed the man down into the 8-inch, 10-inch space between the tracks, covered his body with his own, and saved both their lives. Wesley Autry, you're a hero. I'll see you tomorrow night, True Seekers. Take care, okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.